Welcome everyone to my talk. This talk will be about non-classical causal models and Wigner's friend experiments. And it's a joint work with Marina. Ellie is not here yet. Yeah, Marina, Andrea, Ellie, and Eric. This is the archive number to our paper. So the talk will be not very long, so feel free to interrupt me to ask questions if you want me to clarify anything. Yeah, feel free. To set up the stage for our discussions on non-classical causal models, let's first review the basics of classical causal models and their shortcomings in explaining correlations in a Bell experiment. And later on, I will show that non-classical causal models, which were proposed as resolutions to those shortcomings, actually they are facing further challenges from Nogal theorems involving Wigner's friend thought experiment. The central component of a classical causal model, or actually of any causal model, is the causal structure. In the framework of classical causal models, a causal structure is represented by a directed acyclic graph, or a DAG for short. And here's a very simple one. In a DAG, we have nodes and arrows. Arrows represent the cause-effect relations between the nodes. And each node is associated with a random variable. For example, here, E represents how often you exercise, and H represents, say, the status of your health. Since we will be talking about the shortcomings of classical causal models in explaining Bell correlations, so let's jump into a candidate causal structure for a Bell experiment, this one. In a Bell experiment, we have Alice and Bob in the two wings performing their measurements. Alice has a measurement choice, which is labeled by the random variable X, and she obtains her measurement outcome, A. And Bob, similarly, he has his measurement choice, Y, and obtains his outcome, B. In the causal structure, well, because our goal is to explain the correlations in the Bell experiment, so obviously in the causal structure, we will include the nodes representing those random variables associated to observed things in this experiment. So, welcome. So these nodes are called observed nodes. Basically, they represent things that we have data about. In a causal structure, we can also include another type of node, which we call an unobserved node or a latent node. For example, here we have this node as the latent node. So latent node, they represent things that are not as observed in the experiment, but we think that they may be relevant for the causal explanations for the correlations observed in the experiment. And in this candidate causal structure for the Bell experiment, based on the protocol of the experimental setup, because there will be a bipartite system shared between Alice and Bob, it is natural to presume that there will be a common cause that can help us explain the correlation between Alice and Bob's outcome. Okay. In general, different causal structures will be able to explain different sets of probability distributions under the classical causal modeling framework. This is because different causal structures will impose different constraints on the probability distributions that are compatible with it. For example, for this candidate causal structure for the Bell experiment, we can see that there's no causal path connecting X, Y, and lambda. So we would naturally expect that the probability distributions that can be explained by this causal model with this causal structure will satisfy this statistical independence between lambda and X, Y. So formally speaking, the constraints imposed by a causal structure under the classical causal modeling framework can be expressed through the deseparation rule. This is a rule demanding that any deseparation relation of the causal structure, which I will explain very soon, must imply the corresponding conditional independence in any probability distribution that is compatible with this causal structure. So here, the deseparation rule, it's a graph theoretical notion. It's a graph theoretical concept about a kind of relationship that can hold between the nodes in a graph. And it encodes our intuition about which nodes are causally connected with which. For example, as we mentioned before, just by looking at this graph, we would expect that we see that there's no connection between lambda x and xy. So indeed, according to this graph's theoretical notion, lambda is deseparated from x and y. And then the deseparation rule demands that this deseparation relation must imply the corresponding conditional independence in any compatible probability distributions. There's another deseparation relation in this graph that we are that is important for us, which is that AX is deseparated from BY given lambda. This is because once lambda is taken, the causal connection between AX and BY is broken. So according to the deseparation rule, in any probability distribution that is compatible with this causal structure and the classical causal modeling framework, this factorization condition must be satisfied. For the people who are familiar with the derivation of Bell inequalities, you may already notice that these two equations, they are already enough to derive the Bell inequalities on the probability distribution over ABXY that is compatible for this causal structure. But yeah, as we all know, the Bell inequalities can be violated in a Bell experiment, so it is annoying. It is said that any classical causal model with this causal structure, which we call the Bell DAG, will not be able to explain any violation of Bell inequalities. So this is not to say that there's no classical causal explanations available for the violations of Bell inequalities. In fact, if you are happy to modify the causal structure, for example, by adding these arrows to the Bell DAG, you can explain violations of Bell inequalities, but they all have some undesirable features. For example, they contradict with important causal principles such as no superluminal causation. Say for the first causal structure, if Alice and Bob, they were performing the measurements in a space-like separated fashion, then this causal structure will imply that there's superluminal causation from Alice's setting to Bob's outcome. And similarly, the second causal structure implies there may be ritual causality, and the third causal structure implies that even though Alice and Bob thought they were choosing their measurement settings freely, but actually they are not. Apart from that, as was proven in this paper, any classical causal models with these kind of causal structures need fine-tuning to explain the fact that we never observe superluminal signaling in any experiment. And in the context of Bell experiment, the no superluminal signaling condition boils down to these two. The first one says Alice's outcome is independent from Bob's setting, given Alice's setting, and the second one says Bob's outcome is independent of Alice's setting, given Bob's own setting. And why do we say the classical causal models with this causal structure need fine-tuning? This is because, for example, in the first causal structure, there is a causal influence from Alice's setting to Bob's outcome. So it is only with very specific causal mechanisms that is used by the classical causal model with this causal structure. It is only when the causal mechanism is so specific that such causal influence from Alice's setting to Bob's outcome is always hidden from us, from our observation. Therefore, we say they need fine tuning. And just formally speaking, here in our project, we take the definition of no fine tuning to be the converse of the deseparation rule. Recall that previously we said the deseparation rule says any deseparation relation of the graph must imply the conditional independence in the compatible probability distribution. And here it's the opposite. We say that any conditional independence relations you want your causal structure to reproduce, they must come from the causal structure alone. They must come from the deseparation relation of the causal structure. So, for example, these two no superluminal signaling conditions imply that the causal structure must have the causal structure must have these two deseparation relations. And for example, for the first one, we have a causal path connect from X to B. Therefore, it will violate this deseparation relation, and all the other two violate at least one of them. Therefore, all the classical causal models together with this causal structure must be fine-tuned.
Ilan, Can I take a minute just to quibble a little bit with the definition that it's important to say that you know, you would have fine-tuning if you expect these distributions to be sort of like emerging from a natural process out in nature.
Yes.
Whereas if somebody has engineered a conditional independence, then it's sort of inappropriate to say that my explanation is deficient somehow.
Yes.
So maybe there just needs to be some extra text there saying.
Yes, I prepared extra sentences, but not text. Oh, actually, I prepared the extra slide in the end if anyone wants to go into the details about when a fine-tuned model is problematic and when it's actually expected. So yeah, I totally agree with what Rob said. The violation of no fine-tuning doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad model, but in the case of Bell experiment and in the case with Wigner's friend experiment that we will talk about later, we have many reasons to believe or to think that the fine-tuned model may be undesirable. And yeah, if you want more details, we can discuss later. Good, so just to summarize, all these classical causal explanations, they must, not only they must contradict with important causal principles, but also they must be fine-tuned to explain the fact that we never observe superluminal signaling. Inspired by this analysis, in the past decade, there have been developments in non-classical causal models to explain quantum phenomena. For example, the violations of Bell correlations in a quantum realization of the Bell experiment. And the main idea of this non-classical causal modeling framework is to keep the causal structure intact while generalizing the notion of causality used in those causal models. More specifically, in the non-classical causal modeling framework, we no longer demand that the common cause or the latent node, we no longer demand that the latent node need to be associated with a classical random variable. And if we relax this requirement, then these conditional independence constraints on the compatible probability distributions of this causal structure no longer holds because we don't have lambda anymore. And consequently, we don't have Bell inequalities on PAB given XY that is compatible with this causal structure. And if you associate this latent node to a quantum system, then the framework of this quantum causal modeling of these quantum causal models allows you to explain any correlations over ABXY up to the quantum bound. For example, when ABXY are all binary variables, it allows you to explain the correlation up to the Tsuresen bound. And if you allow the common cause to be explained by a post-quantum system, for example, by a generalized probabilistic theory, then the framework of GPT causal modeling can allow you to explain any correlations in a Bell experiment up to the no superluminal signaling bound. So you cannot go beyond that. Why? Because as proven in this paper by Hasselhoff PUC, the deseparation rule that is restricted to observed nodes is still satisfied by the GPT causal modeling framework. So here, the deseparation that A is deseparated from Y given X and B is deseparated from X given Y, in the GPT causal modeling framework, they still imply this no superluminal signaling condition. So far so good. We have a framework of causal modeling that is quite powerful in the sense that it allows you to produce, not only it allows you to precisely reproduce the quantum bound for Bell correlations, but also it allows you to explain correlation that is beyond quantum. And furthermore, it's quite sensible in the sense that it will not break the no superluminal signaling condition. It will satisfy it without fine-tuning. However, here comes our antagonist, which is beginner's friend. So in recent years, there have been developments in no-go theorems based on extensions to Wegener's friend thought experiment. And in this talk, we will focus on one of them, which is called the local friendliness experiment. The local friendliness experiment, it is a mashup of Bell's experiment and Wegener's friend thought experiment. So what happens is that we want to add the element of Wegener's friend experiment into the protocol of a Bell experiment. So what do? You will complicate the procedure at Alice's side a little bit. In particular, you will give Alice a friend, Charlie. So the protocol goes as follows. First, you prepare a bipartite system, just as in a Bell experiment. Then half of it is sent to Bob. For Bob, he performs his measurement on his share of bipartite system just as if he was in a Bell experiment. He has some measurement choice Y and he obtains some measurement outcome B. And then the other half of the bipartite system is sent to Charlie. For Charlie, he always measures this his share of bipartite system in a fixed basis, which means that in every run of experiment, he performs the same measurement on his share of the bipartite system. And then we have Alice. When Alice, like in a Bell experiment, she has measurement choice X and obtains measurement outcome A. And in particular, when X equals 0, Alice will just copy Charlie's outcome. So we have A equals C. When X does not equal 0, we allow Alice to do whatever she wants on the joint system, including Charlie and Charlie's share of the bipartite system. So this is the setup of this thought experiment. It's clear? Previously, we see that the GPT causal modeling framework with this, under the GPT causal modeling framework with this causal structure, we can explain the Bell correlations in a Bell experiment up to the no superluminal signaling bound. So what will you suggest as the causal structure for the local friendliness experiment? Any suggestions?
Sorry, could you explain again what it means, like X equals 0 implies A equals C?
So Charlie
given some task to do.
So Charlie always measures his share of bipartite system in a fixed basis. Uh-huh. For Alice, she has measurement choice, which is labeled by X. And when in the local friend experiment, we demand that when X equals 0, Alice always copies Charlie's outcome. Uh-huh. She just asks Charlie, what's your outcome? I just copy it on my lab book.
Is classical or quantum?
All X labels early setting, so it's a classical random variable.
Okay, but the red one is a quantum entangled state.
Here we are not specifying what kind of system it is. Yeah, it can be whatever system you could prepare. So
C should be a mediary between A and the common cause.
That's the same as what I thought. So because here Alice has a friend Charlie, so we need to add another node representing Charlie's outcome C. And because Charlie has direct access to the prepared bipartite system, so we have an arrow from the common cause to C. And since Alice can copy Charlie's outcome, so we also add an arrow from Charlie to Alice. And Alice still have access to this bipartite system because when X not equals 0, we allow Alice to do anything on the joint system of Charlie and Charlie's share of bipartite system. Okay.
I assume the following is not relevant, but I just want to note it, which is that the DAG formalism doesn't allow you to express things like when X is 0, the arrow from the common cause to A is actually trivial. So it kind of doesn't let you say that, but that happens to be true in your case, that in the case where X is 0, A can just depend on C and doesn't have to depend directly on the common cause at all.
Yes, but I don't think by itself it is a problem because in the DAG formalism, any arrow just represents potential causal influence. So this condition can just be a requirement. You want the probability distribution that is compatible with this causal structure to satisfy. So it can be an extra condition you impose on the compatible probability distribution. So yeah, by itself, I think it's fine. But as later we will see, the formalism we are using has its shortcomings. Okay, now let's see what kind of probability distributions can be explained by this caudal structure under the GPT caudal modeling framework. As we mentioned before, the GPT caudal modeling framework still satisfies the deseparation rule restricted to the observed nodes. So here in this caudal structure, these are two deseparation relations from this caudal structure. The first one said that AC together is deseparated from Bob's choice Y given X because there's no causal connection. There's no causal path connecting AC and Y, and X is kind of irrelevant. And then the second one says BC are separated from X given Y because BC together, there's no causal path connecting X from BC, and Y is just hanging around like out there. And the deseparation rule for observed nodes says that any probability distribution that is compatible with this caudal structure under the GPT caudal modeling framework, it says these two conditional independence relations must be satisfied. And so I will not give the full derivation, but if you're interested, you can check out this paper. There they show that these two conditional independence relations imply the monogamy relations on PABC given XY. What do I mean by monogamy relations? It means that the correlation between Alice and Bob's outcome, the correlation between Alice and Charlie's outcomes, the correlation between Bob's and Charlie's outcomes, these pairwise correlations, they constrain each other. For example, when Alice has a very strong correlation with Bob, she cannot have a very strong correlation with Charlie. So that's why we call it monogamy relations.
And, one question. There is a line between the yellow and A, a direct line.
This one.
Yeah, is that there because when X is not equal to zero, Alice doesn't do anything?
When X not equal to zero, Alice can do whatever she wants.
And that's why there is a direct line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she can do whatever she wants on the joint system of Charlie and his share of the bipartite system. Yeah. Okay, so it implies the monogamy relations, and now I will give you an explicit example of a monogamy relation, which is when A, B, C, X, Y are all binary variables. So when A, B, C, X, Y are all binary variables, we have this inequality as a monogamy relation. So we have two terms in this inequality. The first term is related to the correlation between Alice and Bob. And this is the same expression as you would use in one version of the CHCSH inequality. And the second term, this one, expressed the correlation between Alice and Charlie. So individually, the maximum that can be achieved by this term by itself, it's 1. And individually, you can also achieve 1 for this term. So the fact that their sum is only 7 over 4 means that there is a trade-off in how strong, there's a trade-off between the how strong the correlations you can achieve between Alice and Bob and how strong you can achieve in the correlation between Alice and Charlie. That's why it's a monogamy relation. And in the context of local friendliness experiment, since we have X equals 0, A equals C, this monogamy relation just reduced to the CHSH inequality because this term will be 1 and 7 over 4 minus 1 gives you 3 over 4. And this CHSH inequality in this scenario, it is also an example of the so-called local friendliness inequalities that are used in the literature on local friendliness no-go theorems. So, in general, local friendliness inequalities, they are monogamy relations in the context of the local friendliness experiment. And usually, the local friendliness inequalities, they are strictly weaker than the Bell inequalities, meaning that it is harder to violate local friendliness inequalities than to violate Bell inequalities. But in the case, for example, when A, B, C, X, Y are all binary, the local friendliness inequalities and Bell inequalities, they coincide. We just have the CHSH inequality when all the variables are binary. Okay, so we learned that this causal structure and the GPT causal modeling framework will gives us local friendliness inequalities. And however, there has been quantum proposals shows that in a quantum realization of the local friendliness experiment, the local friendliness inequalities can be violated. And now I will explain this quantum proposal. The details of the proposal can be found in these two papers. So in the quantum proposal, one requirement we will have is that Charlie will be performing his measurement in a relatively isolated laboratory so that we can view Charlie's lab as a closed system. Then, according to quantum mechanics, any closed system evolves unitarily. So if you believe that quantum theory is universal in the sense that it can also be applied to macroscopic systems, then no matter what happens in Charlie's laboratory, the laboratory as a whole, the joint system, they evolve unitarily, even if when Charlie makes a measurement on his share of bipartite system. And then, if we further assume that Alice can have ridiculously powerful technology so that she can perform any arbitrary quantum operation on Charlie's closed laboratory, then we will be able to violate local friendliness inequalities because essentially it will allow us to essentially the set of correlations over A, B, X, Y you can obtain in this quantum protocol for local friendliness experiment will be the same set of correlations you will be able to obtain in a quantum realization of the Bell experiment because when X equals zero, Alice copies Charlie's outcome. So when X equals zero, Alice's outcome is a result of a measurement on the on this half of the bipartite system that was sent to this wing. And when X not equals, when X doesn't equal zero, Alice can reverse Charlie's measurement process by applying the inverse unitary describing Charlie's measurement, and then take Charlie's share of bipartite system to perform a measurement on this system herself. So when X does not equal, when X does not equal zero, effectively, Alice can also perform a measurement. Effectively, Alice will perform a measurement. How to say? Effectively, the outcome Alice obtains is a measurement outcome on the half of the bipartite system that was sent to this wing. Therefore, the set of correlations that can be achieved by this quantum protocol will be the same set of correlations that will be achieved in a Bell experiment. And since we know quantum experiment in the Bell scenario will violate Bell inequalities, and since we already saw that in the case when ABCXY, when they are all binary, the local friendliness inequality is just reduced to the Bell inequality, which is the CHSH inequality. So the quantum protocol can violate the local friendliness inequalities in the local friendliness experiment. Question? Yeah?
You said that Alice can perform inverse unitary.
Mm-hmm.
But if Charlie has already done the measurement, then how does Alice perform the inverse unitary?
So if you assume Charlie is in a closed quantum system, whatever he does, including measurement, the whole lab, including Charlie, and yeah, it must evolve unitarily. And if Alice has this superpower.
But then, how does Alice know what unitary to apply, including the measurement?
Before the experiment, they can agree on, say, Charlie, say, I will perform the measurement in some specific way. So based on our knowledge of quantum theory, we know this corresponding to, for example, some specific C naught. And then Alice just apply the inverse of the C0 gate, okay. Which is also C0. And there's another.
I have a certain question. I'm just trying to figure out whether Charlie's measurement is known by Alice, but it just
happens. Yes, it's known before the experiment. They can agree on what measurement device Charlie will use and yeah, how he will perform the measurement.
Yeah, she just doesn't know the outcome.
Uh-huh. Presumably she would need to know much more than that. Like you'd say something like, she knows what the Lagrangian of the universe is, and she knows what the initial configuration of the, you know, 10 to the 24 particles in Charlie's lab is, and so she just applies the unitary, which is U inverse of the universal Lagrangian, to those 10 to the 24 particles.
Okay.
And she doesn't need to care about what that means in the language of, you know, human uh-huh. I measured Z. Uh-huh. She actually needs to know everything. She needs to know where every
yeah.
you know, molecule of air was in the room mm-hmm. to do this.
But in the idealized scenario, right, that Ida mm-hmm. has mentioned, like if it's a closed laboratory, then she doesn't need to know all the particles in the universe.
Really. No, not all the particles in the universe, but all the particles in
the
laboratory.
Lab.
Oh, the laboratory, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the question of what unitary is just, oh, the universal Lagrangian. Period. That's it. It's simple. I mean,
okay.
simple to state, not to do.
It would be problematic if, because Charlie and the other things have mass, and so if they move around, then that information you can't screen that. And so, but I think it's a Gedanken experiment, so it's fine.
Well, it's a Gedanken experiment. Depend on how much requirements you want to put on your observers. For example, in this paper, they propose that we can. Well, not can, but it's possible that we can perform such experiments with a quantum AI on a very complicated quantum computer. So if you accept that Charlie can be a quantum AI, doesn't have to do it to be a human, then it doesn't have to be a Gedanken experiment. Okay, so this quantum protocol can violate local fairness inequalities. So it's quite annoying that any GPT causal model with this causal structure, which we call the LF DAG, will not be able to explain any violation of local fairness inequalities, because as we saw before, this causal structure together with the deseparation rule for observed nodes imply the monogamy relations, which imply local fairness inequalities. And actually, even if you go beyond GPT causal modeling, even if you allow your latent node to be associated with some more exotic type of system, as long as your causal model satisfies the deseparation rule for the observed nodes, the local fairness inequalities must be satisfied. And this is because, as I just said, to derive the local fairness inequalities, which is a special case of a monogamy relation, you only need two requirements, the causal structure given by this DAG and the deseparation rule for observed nodes. So for the experts in the audience, what it means is that even though in certain causal structures, you will have GPT valid inequalities in the sense that if you go beyond GPTs, you can violate those inequalities, even if you satisfy the deseparation rule for observed nodes. But this causal structure is not one of them. You cannot violate it by simply going beyond GPT. Similar as before, if you really want to use the causal models that satisfy the deseparation rule for observed events to explain the violation of local fairness inequalities, you can add arrows to the local fairness causal structure, for example, these ones. But yeah, similar story again. They all have some undesirable features. For example, they may imply superluminal causation, reticausality, or superdeterminism. And furthermore, in our work, we proved that they all need fine-tuning to explain the fact that we never observe superluminal signaling and we never observe ritual signaling. So in the context of local fairness experiment, it boils down to these three conditions. The first two are the same as the ones we used in the Bell experiment, which saying that Alice setting must be independent from Bob's, no, Alice outcome must be independent from Bob's setting, Bob's outcome must be independent from Alice setting. And the third one is the one that is related to no ritual signaling. It says that Charlie's outcome must be independent from both Alice and Bob's setting. So maybe some of you will be a little bit worried about the third one, because, for example, in the quantum realization, the quantum proposal for the how you realize the violation of local fairness inequalities, Charlie's outcome C will be erased in some runs of the experiment because Alice will reverse Charlie's measurement process. So Charlie's outcome C is not always available at the end of experiment for you to establish this conditional independence. But it's okay. Actually, in our paper, we constructed explicit operational protocols to get the empirical evidence for this conditional independence relation. And if you're interested later, we can explain more how we achieve that. So this is fine. So basically, any causal models that satisfy the deseparation rule for observed nodes must be fine-tuned if they want to explain the violations of local fairness inequalities. Okay, so we already went from classical to quantum to GPT, and we even relaxed the restriction on GPT. So what else can we do if we want to explain the violations of local fairness inequalities? One thing maybe you could ask is that how about cyclic causal models? Because so far in any causal models I discussed in this talk, we assume that the causal structure must be represented by a DAG, which is acyclic. And maybe some of you know that cyclic causal models, they can violate the deseparation rule for observed events in some circumstances, even if you restrict your latent nodes to only be GPT or quantum or even classical. So maybe you could hope that if we use cyclic causal models, you may not be constrained by this kind of no fine-tuning argument. However, we show that this is not promising. Cyclic causal models may not be helpful because, in fact, we realized that our no fine-tuning argument can be generalized to any causal models that satisfies a very basic property that we call compositionality. So here, and I'm not gonna tell you the details of the compositionality, but what we know is that all of our current causal modeling frameworks, they satisfy this compositionality. And yeah, it's really a quite basic and natural one. So we think, we expect it to be continuously hold maybe for some new cyclic causal models. So basically, we proved that any causal models with this compositionality must be fine-tuned to explain violations of local fairness inequalities, even if the causal model is cyclic, and even if it violates the deseparation rule. Okay, what do we do? What's next? So far, we've seen that no quantum GPT or even more exotic causal models with the local fairness, the LF DAG can explain quantum violations of local fairness inequalities as long as they satisfy the deseparation rule for observed nodes. And we also saw that adding any extra arrow to the LF DAG leads to fine-tuning and it will contradict important causal principles such as no superluminal causation. So what to do? One assumption I haven't explicitly mentioned in this talk is that in all these causal modeling framework, they assume the existence of the joint probability distribution over A, B, C, X, Y. But this probability distribution, we cannot observe it because, as mentioned before, Charlie's measurement outcome may be erased in certain runs of the experiment, for example, in the quantum proposal for the local fairness experiment. For the quantum proposal for local fairness experiment. So PABCXY may not be always available at the end of experiment for us to analyze and form these statistics. And certainly quantum physics by itself doesn't demand the existence of this joint probability distribution. So maybe you could say that, okay, one assumption we can relax in this causal modeling framework is to deny the existence of this joint probability distribution. For example, you may say that Charlie's outcome, since it has so many funny business, maybe Charlie's outcome is somehow less real than we originally thought. And this is certainly true, for example, in interpretations such as relational quantum mechanics or qubism, because For example, in relational quantum mechanics, a measurement outcome is only meaningful with respect to the physical systems that participated in the measurement interaction. So Charlie's outcome C, for example, it's not meaningful for Alice when it was reversed by Alice. And for example, in cubism, they would say Charlie's outcome C is only meaningful for the observer who observed it. And so in cubism, you also would say there's no well-defined joint probability distribution over PAB, over ABC XY. And for example, you can also go to many worlds. In many worlds, although C is real, but there are multiple Cs existing at the same time. It's just they are in different worlds. So there, again, you don't have a well-defined probability distribution over PABC XY. But at least for me, I think all of these interpretations, this explanation is a little bit, I feel a bit uncomfortable with it. So if you share this discomfort with me, maybe you will also be similar to me that, feel similar to me that like this local fairness experiment and this no fine-tuning argument is really troublesome. So what do we do? Remember that when we went from classical causal modeling to GPT causal modeling, the idea was that we tried to keep the causal structure intact so that we don't need to have fine-tuning and we don't violate important causal principles, but we updated our notion of causality. And I think here, what this local fairness argument is telling us is that not only we need to update our notions of causality, but we really need to look at causality and inference together and to update their notions together. This is because the probability distribution over ABC given XY, this joint probability distribution can be viewed as an object describing our state of knowledge over these variables. So they are related to how we do inference. And so maybe we need to look at causality and inference together. At the moment, we don't have any concrete proposals, but this leads as to Rob's research program on developing a causal inferential theory for quantum mechanics. And for the people who are interested in it, you can check out this paper and stay tuned. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dorian, you have a question?
Oh, I do. Just to follow up on the previous slide.
Uh-huh.
So is the question whether the joint probability really exists the same as saying that, like, you shouldn't really represent C as being that in that white triangle, which was like an observable?
This is one way to say that the joint probability distribution cannot exist because we cannot use a single classical random variable to represent Charlie's outcome.
Okay.
For example, in many worlds, they will say you will have a lot of C. And in relational quantum mechanics, the status of A and C, they will be different because C is only meaningful to Charlie and say Charlie's laboratory while not being meaningful to A. So you'll have different representation of these nodes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, can I just complement one thing? I think that the solution that Ilo was proposing in the end of like trying to understand how causation and inference interact is a solution that also says that P of ABC XY doesn't exist, but while still keeping a C, right?
Like, yeah, well, still keeping C that as classical as we can, as kind of close to our usual notion of measurement outcome as we can, like keep it as intuitive as we can, instead of just saying C is only meaningful for certain system and not meaningful for the rest.
But even if C is erased at some mm-hmm. point, it did exist, so why can't you know P of ABC XY?
I totally agree with you that the fact I agree. Like the fact that C is erased doesn't mean that there cannot exist a joint probability distribution.
At some point it existed, so
yes. So that's why this is really puzzling, like how exactly can we explain that maybe this probability distribution doesn't exist. And one argument one could give is that since it's not observable, so from the operational point of view, there's no reason to demand the existence of disjoint probability distribution. But I think Jakob will first raise.
So I have two questions. One is not a real question, and one is a question. So the first one is, what is the D in the separation rule?
Ah, there was an explanation why it's called D, but I forgot why it's called D. Yeah.
Directed.
Ah, directed. Okay.
And then, so just to see if I understood everything well. So you start from this sort of graphs, this dark. And you say, okay, this dark express my intuition or my idea what is the causal structure of the system that I'm studying.
Yes. Okay.
And then you say, okay, there is something that is called the deseparation rule. And this separation rule is something that from this structure that you draw, so your, from your intuition how the system is telling you how sort of a marginal probability distribution, which margin probability distribution exists. So for example, if two things are separated, you can say, okay, higher probability distribution between B and A, but not C, or something like that. From what I understood, this separation means that since these two things are separated, then it doesn't, this probability distribution do not depend on this parameter.
For example,
so I can remove a parameter. So if you can remove a parameter, I can just talk about this small one that is a marginal probability distribution.
Yes.
So you start from your intuition on how the causal structure is. This separation tell you, okay, this causal structure implies the existence of these marginals.
Yes.
Okay. And then what you are trying to do is just finding sort of a...
we are solving a marginal problem.
A marginal problem where it's not, the problem is not finding what is the global probability distribution, but the problem is finding which is the theory that describes this marginal in some way. But the global state or the global description of your system can be whatever you want. Now you are restricted to GPTs or to quantum or to whatever. You can even restrict to P, A, B, C, X, Y to have a probability distribution. But the global thing, you can do whatever you want, no?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I understood you correctly, but the idea is that you are trying to find a global probability distribution like P, A, B, C, X, Y, and you want this global probability distribution. For example, when you restricted your theory to GPT, then you want this global probability distribution to be reproduced by certain GPT.
My point was just that if you start from this dark, and you want this separation rule like something real, what is actually telling you is that, I mean, from what I understood, the separation rule is telling you the only important elements of this problem of yours, since you have these causal structures, are these marginals. These are something real or something that you want a probability about. The rest you should not think about too strictly. So you cannot, you can also not have probability or something. So the elements are these marginals.
Yes, right. So maybe the confusion coming from the way I phrased deseparation rule. So maybe the deseparation rule should really be phrased as the deseparation relation in the graph implies that the marginal of the joint probability distribution must satisfy the...
Yeah, but the marginals must satisfy something.
Yeah.
But there's no way you should say that of the global probability distribution. It's not in this structure, no?
It's not in deseparation rule itself, but it's an assumption of all this causal modeling framework that all this marginal coming from one single probability distribution.
When you have a causal model, it also implies that you have a global thing. So
Yes. And then the deseparation rule says the marginals of this global probability distributions should satisfy those conditional independence relations. So that was the assumption I was saying in the end that I didn't explicitly specify from the beginning. And Rob.
So I wanted to have a go at answering Maria's question just for the sake of saying it. That I think if you ask, you know, in what circumstances is it appropriate for me to use a joint probability as opposed to something more exotic? like a conditional density operator or something like that. I think the only time where it's really necessary is when you need it for empirical adequacy. So, you know, in some limits, we need to recover joint probability distributions because experiments show us that the relative frequencies we observe in long-run statistical experiments tend to converge to the probabilities in those joint distributions. So that's one place where we have to get that limit right, just for empirical adequacy. So question, is this one of those circumstances, A, B, C, X, and Y? Do we compare the probabilities in that joint distribution to relative frequencies in an experiment? No, we do not, because C doesn't exist at the end to make a statistical sample. So it is not one of the circumstances where we need to describe our knowledge by joint distribution on pain of empirical adequacy. And so it's a place where we could say, yeah, that state of knowledge is going to be described by something more exotic.
I guess maybe Maria's concern was that if we are realist, then why do the existence of some joint probability distribution depend on whether we can compare it with our empirical data or not? Why our ability of observing something matters? Why this is a criteria?
I guess I would say if you flip it and say, like, why not be arbitrarily radical? Like, why do we ever have to use joint probability to use our knowledge at all? Like, if you kind of, from that perspective, say, oh, I just want to, you know, use a more exotic theory of inference, then it sort of says, well, you know, you're going to have to constrain your exoticness in some scenarios, but not necessarily this one.
Yeah, I think I wasn't assuming that you need the existence of C after running many times the experiment. I was just thinking that at some point in the experiment, C did exist, so this can count as one of the runs of the experiment.
I think the thing is more like that's true, and this is why the approach that they're trying to take is not a perspectival approach in the sense of like C only exists from the point of view of Charlie or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to take an approach where yes, C existed, but probability theory is something that we like developed explain like facts about our knowledge and facts about like things that we observe in reality. But then they're saying for this specific case, what we should use is not probability theory.
Mm-hmm. So another question on this one, isn't it kind of, not correct to say that this thing exists from the point of view that probability distributions only exist if they can be observed by a single agent. So here there is no agent that can observe C and A simultaneously, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So then surely it doesn't exist.
I don't understand.
Well, where does this surely coming from? Are you saying similar thing as what Rob said before?
If the answer to your question is that if two things are at different stages of time, classical probability theory tells me that's no obstacle to me describing my joint knowledge of them.
Sure.
If I have C early, A late, and I say, well, how should I describe my uncertainty?
Answer a joint distribution over C and A.
Yeah. If somebody says, oh, but C got destroyed before A's time,
we say, we don't care.
Yeah, I can talk about the joint probability of this fossil.
Sure,
and
that's
dinosaur.
What Maria said, but I'm saying something slightly different. Is that C, like, if C is destroyed, not only is C destroyed, but the C's original outcome is not accessible to anyone, right?
Sure, but I guess the classical probabilist would say accessibility at a single moment of time was never a criterion for the applicability of a joint distribution. So there are no dinosaurs today, but that doesn't mean I can't write down a joint probability distributions of dinosaurs existing and these fossils being what they are. That joint distribution makes sense, and it's the right way to describe it.
Yeah, but that's like a possibility in terms of we just happen to not, you know, be there at that time. But in principle, if the dinosaurs had, CCTV, they could have recorded what they're doing. And we would be able to watch and see every outcome that happened in every experiment the dinosaurs did and every experiment we're doing. But here, it's a fundamental limitation that once C's outcome has been erased, that information cannot have been copied and sent to the future, right?
Let's make it more radical. Say there's some piece of information on a piece of paper in the past that got thrown into a black hole.
Okay.
And then I ask today, can I talk about the joint distribution of information here and information there?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no copy, let's say, of that information. Would you say, oh, because it got thrown into the black hole and there's no copy of it today, I just can't talk about it?
But that's classical information, right? So you could have been copied.
But Charlie's outcome, when you see a number,
outcome is classical.
Yeah, it's a number.
It could have been copied and sent outside the box. It wasn't, because we were able to reverse it, but it could have been.
But so if it had been copied, yeah, then Alice would not have been able to reverse.
Right, and if the paper had been copied before it got thrown in the black hole, that information would exist today.
No, but it's a bit different, no? Because if the information sent into the black hole had been copied,
yes,
you could still have thrown the original paper in the black hole.
Okay.
But in this case, if you had copied Charlie's information, then Alice would not have been able to perform the reversing gate.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
So then you would not be able to be in the situation today. So somehow the counterfactual is different.
So are you saying that whether something will be entirely erased in the future,
yeah,
determines whether this thing is classical or not, like whether this thing is a usual outcome or not? So are you saying that something happening in the future can change the status of?
Well, I mean, like, let's, I just mean that, like, there should be a counterfactual possibility of an external agent. I think, okay, I'm just saying what I think I randomly comes into my head, but like, it seems like natural that there should be an external agent that is able to observe both A and C. Could have been able to observe both A and C in the future. Like, you could have copied C, and then A could have done her stuff, and we still observe, we keep C and we also keep A, but that's not possible, right?
That's not possible, yeah.
Exactly, but in Rob's example of the black hole, it could have been possible.
Well, can it? Suppose I assume action-reaction, every attempt to copy something disturbs it in some way. Mm-hmm. So your criterion seems to be, oh, I should be able to copy something, and its evolution is exactly what it would have been if I hadn't copied it.
Uh-huh.
But if that's not possible in my classical theory, and I would say most classical theories, it's not possible. Every time you to copy something, you have to interact with it. When you interact with it, you end up disturbing it. So isn't it just like this scenario as well?
But that's a bit different, because you could still, I mean, that's like related to some complicated thing like entropy and stuff like this, but you could always make an idealized classical scenario where you can copy information, right? But in the quantum case, it's not that, like, it's fundamentally impossible to copy information.
But it's, copy information is possible only in the information point of view, but whenever you put physics inside, you cannot copy information.
That's true, but I mean, in both cases there's physics, right? But there's an information theoretic distinction between the classical and quantum case, right?
I think Dorian.
So I think this comes back maybe to a point that Rob made much earlier, which is, oh, you can't really have that little box up there, right, where you assume that, because that's not being transferred over into the day. Right, and then we can move on, but like, it seems like that's a kind of special case where you do get it. So Alice ends up knowing what Charlie's outcome is at the end of the experiment, but it seems like it's a bit of a problem that special case isn't really being represented somehow in that DAG. Like, it would be nice to be able to distinguish maybe that case from another weird case in which you don't have C in the triangle or something about it or something like that, right? Like,